This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on Highway 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And now we welcome Dr. Lou.
And I say good morning to you, Lori.
Good morning.
Another great day to be here in Fairhope and in the USA, that's for sure. All right, folks, you know, another crazy news week. Amazing how things are developing in Ukraine. And I think we need to spend a little bit of time on this, because the reality is that it looks as though the Ukrainians are actually starting to possibly beat the Russians. Now, you would think that that would be a great thing, but to the Biden administration, evidently they don't want anything really bad to happen to Putin so that he does something nuts. We need to talk about this a little bit more and dig into what is driving Putin, what's happening with this, why all of this took place. And I think, you know, these kinds of discussions are always tricky, because, you know, there's always that unknown factor of, well, why did Putin do what he did? Well, I mean, why did Hitler do what he did? I mean, we can look at these things historically, and at least with history, there's some time in there to kind of develop resources, blah, blah, blah. Today, we don't have that luxury. You know, it's taking place now, and so it seems like we should really try to figure out what is going on so that we can come up with a realistic response to it, and one that has the possibility of shaping the future of world politics. And that's really one of the issues that's here. And we've been talking about this for the last 3 or 4 weeks, about just what does Putin really intend here? And is this a prelude to, you know, his belief that he can reconstitute the Soviet Empire? And if that's the case, then what's our response going to be? And the fact that we've got all of these former, you know, colonies of the Soviet Union in NATO pretty much determines what the response is going to be. It's going to be war. I mean, unless Biden has sold himself out to the Chinese and the Russians through Hunter Biden and all of his machinations with money and all the rest of this stuff, you know, Biden is going to be in a pickle. And he's already in a pickle for a whole lot of different reasons that he's brought on to himself. And one of those pickles is another topic I want to talk about today, this question of inflation, all right? We know it's there. He keeps blaming, you know, the pandemic and Putin on the inflation. And I think that there's a different story there, and we need to kind of dig into that a little bit too. Here's another one that just drives everyone nuts that looks at what is going on at the border. I mean, aside from the fact that you have all these illegals from 157 different countries now coming across, and the latest batch had 34 who were on the terrorist watch list, oops, you know, where the hell is Biden to stop all this crap? And of course, the answer is he's not there because they don't want it to stop. So what do we do as individuals who are watching this disaster? That's only going to get worse. Let's talk about that and see what's going on. I'd like to talk a little bit about a couple of state issues that's going on. I think that, you know, the session's about to run out. And last week, they passed SB 171, which our groups in the Alabama Conservative Coalition have been fighting. They passed it, and now we're trying to get, you know, Meemaw to veto it. Well, we'll see how far that goes, because I mean, she's got a little political problem here. She's taken this state down to 52nd in math and 48th in English language arts and the national assessments. So, you know, what does she have to do? She needs to fix the problem. She needs to at least look like she's fixing the problem. And that's what SB 171 does. It looks like they're fixing the problem, and it doesn't. I mean, it is a joke, okay? Absolute joke, but nevertheless, she's grasping at straws to try to put a nice face on what is her problem with Alabama education. We need to talk a little bit more about that. So that you know, I mean, once I start talking about education in Alabama and the frustrations therein, it's hard for me to get back on track. Okay, it is hard to get back on track because this has to be the biggest avoidable disaster in human history. I mean, once they went ahead and took Riley's, you know, desire to have Common Core back in 2010, that's what began this problem. And we're still living with it. And it's not so much we're living with it, but our children are suffering under this. Okay? So I will regain control of my mind here and focus back on, you know, what I started to talk about at the beginning of this, which is, what are we doing about what's going on with Putin and Ukraine? All right. Excuse me. Let's frame this along the lines of the history that seems to be driving Putin's desire to reconstitute the Soviet Union, okay? Now, he can have his views about whether or not the Soviet Union was good, bad, or indifferent, but there were a lot of people that didn't think the Soviet Union was such a great place to have be in control of your country. And so the Baltic states, Czechoslovakia, Poland, you get the picture. None of them wanted it, okay? And for the Poles, it was bitterly ironic that Poland was the cause of World War II, okay? Now, think about this. The Germans invaded from the West, and guess what? 15 days into the Polish campaign, the Ruskies invaded from the East. That was part of the Nazi-Soviet pact, the deal, because the Russians have always had, in the long history of controlling parts of Poland, if not all of Poland. So Hitler struck a deal, and that allowed him to not have to fight a two-front war because he knew that war would ensue if he went after Poland. And that's exactly what happens. The Brits and the French all declared war. The bitter irony is that after the war was over, 1945, who remained in control of Poland? Stalin was able to make sure that the Polish government in exile in London did not come back to power. Okay? He had his own, the Lublin Poles, communists, who were able to, because the Soviet army was occupying Poland, they just took over. I mean, do you really see the problems that we have in terms of trying to figure out the history here? So the Poles, for years, smoldered with bitterness under Soviet occupation. And when that occupation went away, what do you think they wanted to do? Be free. And the way to be really free and to make sure they stayed free was to join NATO. Now, this has become a major issue within the academic world here in the United States. And the argument basically has become, and it started under the Clinton period, because Clinton reached out to Ukraine and others to become part of NATO. A security umbrella that would guarantee that if the former Soviet Union, the Ruskies, decided that they really wanted to take power again in these countries, well, then that just wasn't going to stand. Now, and here's where we get into historical interpretations. There were people who argued, and Fareed Zakaria makes this point, and I don't usually agree with Fareed about too much, you know that. But in this particular case, there were issues related to, well, was it a little bit too aggressive for us to reach out to, you know, some of these former states and offer them NATO, the NATO umbrella, security umbrella. The latest example of someone in the academic world, John Mersheimer from Chicago, a realist interpreter of world politics, basically says that the United States never should have done that because the Russians had special interests in these various countries, and that it was an affront to their security concerns and vital interests for NATO to become, you know, on the borders of Russia. That's where this argument is. And I think that to a certain degree, you know, I can understand that. But I also understand that in the liberal interpretation of the post-Cold War world that came about was that countries have a right to determine who and what they're going to be in terms of their governance. Now, if Mersheimer and them disagree with that, they can disagree till the cows come home. But it seems kind of like a fundamental right. Okay? So here we are now arguing about, well, you know, we were wrong to do this. We prodded the Russian bear, and this is what we get. So think about that as you go through and try to tease out what exactly are our interests and what should we be doing about what's happening with Ukraine. And it seems to me that when you look carefully at Putin's responses to various things relating to his security needs, there's nothing new about him rejecting the idea that the state of Georgia was going to be in NATO. Okay? This was floated around in 2008. And if you remember, I think I've talked about this before, they ended up taking a province out of Georgia, south of Sussia. And the argument that people like Brzezinski, who is by no means a right-winger, that Brzezinski makes in his article from 2015 before he passed away, he makes the case that Putin was just absolutely determined that these various former states in the Soviet Union were not going to be allowed to move in the direction of NATO any further than what had already been seen by 2008. And so, especially on the question of Ukraine, was he ready to do whatever he had to do to prevent Ukraine from being involved with NATO? Now, once again, we get back to fundamental issues here. These various revolutions that took place in the early 2000s, okay? And the Orange Revolution was one of them in Ukraine. And that revolution pushed out a Russian stooge who was in charge of Ukraine. That led to further alienation, more problems between Putin and Ukraine. It ended up with Putin moving to retake Crimea in 2008. So think about this. The Soviet Union gave Crimea, I think I've mentioned this a couple of times before, gave Crimea to the Ukrainians because of all the crimes that Stalin had perpetrated on the Ukrainian people. Again, when get back to the Kulaks, you know, the forcing collectivization, 10 to 12 million people killed as a result of it. The Ukrainians were bitterly opposed to the damn communists. Okay? Got that? And so it's no wonder that when, and I mentioned this last week, when the Germans came into Ukraine, in the southern front that they had, they were welcomed by the Ukrainian people with flowers. Many of them joined, you know, SS battalions. Now, I can understand why, okay? And so now Putin's talking about denazification. Well, the reason he may be talking about that is because of what Stalin did. I mean, these memories don't go away. And so now you're faced with a situation where the Ukrainians, and they are actually winning, they just pushed out, you know, these Russians around Kiev, or Kyiv now. And again, in discovering what the Russians did at Bukha, a town that was on the outskirts of Kyiv, I mean, atrocities, rapes, killings. Evidently, there's a ditch that they uncovered that had, you know, political prisoners assassinated. Look, this is nothing new with the communists, okay? If you go back to the 1968 Tet Offensive and what happened there in Wei, 5,000 people, the intellectuals, the teachers, the anti-communists were lined up, shot, and put in a ditch, covered up. And of course, the American media, you know, didn't want to cover that. Oh, heaven forbid, Uncle Ho, the George Washington of Vietnam. Give me a friggin' break. Notice, Lori, I didn't say anything too bad. I was close.
I was standing by.
Yes, she was standing by with the thumb on the button, okay? All right, so you have these kinds of historical examples of what communists do, okay? And so now you've got the situation where the Ruskies have lost 15,000 men and, you know, more, you know, wounded and missing and blah, blah, blah. So at least in the center and in on the western part of Ukraine, the Ukrainians are doing fine. In the southeastern part, Mariupol is still under attack. And I guess Putin's strategy here is to link the Don Basin area with the southeastern Crimean area, so he's got control over the Baltic seaports, except for Odessa now. That has not been taken. So Ukraine still has access to the sea through Odessa. But whether or not the Ukrainians can hold out on that remains to be seen. So lots of success on the northern front and in the central part, less so on the southeastern part. Now here's Blinken on one of the TV shows saying that what's going on in Kyiv is a strategic defeat for Putin. I don't know if you can call that a strategic defeat. I think what you can call it is a major blow that has caused him to have to, you know, rethink what he can do. And again, the Russian army has not performed very well, particularly in this northern and central areas. So the point now is, what is Putin going to be able to, you know, do in terms of an off-ramp, figuring out ceasefires and all the rest of that? But I go back to my basic point about this. Putin's inclination has always been to make sure that he was going to resurrect the former Soviet Union, okay? And so our interests here are clear. He can't be seen, he can't get away with this, is what it really boils down to, because it will only embolden him to do more. And guess what? The Baltic states, Moldavia, Romania, Poland are all targets. And so if he gets the idea that the United States is going to just walk away from Ukraine, and even though we don't have a pact with them or anything like that, is it in our interest to tell a dictator like Putin that this far and no further? And if that's the case, then it seemed to me pretty self-evident that we need to do more than what Biden has been doing in terms of supplying and helping the Ukrainians out. And once again, we get back to, you know, things that I've said before about Biden's inability to understand foreign policy. He's been wrong on so many foreign policy issues, and he's repeating his mistakes. This Iranian deal that they're trying to force on us, it is absurd, okay? A flawed deal that now they want to give billions of Iranian money back to the Iranians
And what are they going to do with it? It's not going to go to build roads and bridges in Iran. It's going to be to fund their proxy terrorist groups in Syria, you know, and in Lebanon and in Palestine. That's what they're doing. And this is Biden just trying to resurrect Obama's legacy? You've got to be kidding me. The interests of our national security should be primary, but oh no, this guy is compromised by all the people who are supporting the Iranians. I mean, Biden has the Russians working on with the Iranians to try to get some sort of a new deal. I mean, folks, just run the reel back to 2012. Obama tells Assad, if you use chemical weapons on your people, that's a red line. That red line went away, don't you remember? And you know why it went away? Because Obama had to have the Ruskies intervene to make sure that he could get his deal, the nuclear deal, with the Iranians. It's that simple, okay? And nothing's changed with this. I mean, these people have learned nothing. Trump had it absolutely right. Shut the Iranians down, bring them to their knees, and maybe they'll get some sense and we can do something with them. But oh no, took them off the hook. Notice how what I'm trying to get here is that we have an individual in the White House who doesn't get anything. Now you can say whatever reason you think that's the case, whether you think he's compromised, whether you think he's just a commie, whether you think he's just plain stupid, take your pick. It doesn't matter. What matters is what he's doing, and we all see it, okay? So that takes us right back to what is our national interest in dealing with the Ukrainians, okay? And this crisis over Putin's war there. And it seems to me that the best thing we can do is make sure that Putin gets his ass beat. Okay, it's that simple. Laurie, I didn't go too far with that, did I?
No. That'll pass.
That was all right. Okay, so notice where we are then. Why is it that he slow walks? And again, I've said this to you all before. Why does he slow walk the kinds of weapons that Zelensky needs? And we've seen that. Whether it was March of 21, whether it was the summer, whether it was the fall of 21, slow walks these things. We're still waiting to see them get, you know, anti-aircraft systems that can really shoot down, you know, the planes that are, you know, the Russians are using to launch missiles. We're still waiting to see him come up with maybe getting, you know, something to shoot down the missiles themselves, like the Iron Dome. Now, I realize, and I mentioned this before, last week or the week before, the Iron Dome is complicated because the U.S. and the Israelis, you know, got together and they jointly produced it. So we have to get the Israelis to agree to this. And, of course, the Israelis are hesitant because the Ruskies have final say on whether or not the Israelis can go bomb Syrian targets, you know, where people like the Iranians are trying to do bad things against the Israelis. So you have this situation that is fairly complicated. And I think that the degree to which American interests are to make sure that Putin does not win here is further complicated by the fact that, well, if he's really off his rocker, like some people say, then guess what? What happens if he uses WMD, chemical or biological weapons? What happens if he really goes nuts and uses a tactical nuke? Now, look, these are possibilities. So what's the American response going to be? I mean, back to 2012. Obama had a red line. Trump had a red line in Syria, too, and he sent missiles in to destroy Syrian WMD centers. So it's not as though, you know, we're not capable of drawing a red line and living up to it. But here again, it's just like the no-fly zone. As much as I want to see, you know, Zelensky and the Ukrainians win and being willing to do just about everything in our power to make that happen, I'm not ready to go down the no-fly zone yet. Why should we get into a damn war with the Russians? Because that's what a no-fly zone is going to mean. It's just that simple. So here you have a situation where, you know, I'm advocating for American interest to make sure Putin doesn't win, yes, but I'm also not going to push the envelope to where we're going to, you know, get into a shooting war with the Ruskies, especially, you know, getting back to a 1962 scenario where we're eyeball to eyeball with the Russians in a nuclear situation. You know, mutually assured destruction is not the end goal here, folks, okay? You know, beating Putin is through sanctions and through the Ukrainians doing what they're doing right now and giving them everything that they need. And I would argue that we can do that. And we have been doing it. We just need to do more of it and do it faster and better. Okay? That's where this thing really is going, as far as I'm concerned. And, of course, here we are now at 10:31, and I'm running out of time. But I'm sure that Lori will give me a few extra minutes, two or three. She's waving that finger. Okay. All right, so let's turn to another issue that I wanted to talk about. Okay? That's this business of inflation. Biden keeps trying to pass it off as something that was caused by the pandemic, you know, and then by Putin, all right? So here are some interesting statistics. In January of 2021, the inflation rate was 1.4%. In March of 21, it was 2.6, a little bit after, you know, Biden took office. But notice in that particular month, he pumped in $1.9 trillion in COVID aid. The COVID thing was over. We all know it, knew it, but he wanted to pump this in anyway. And so what you ended up doing was creating a situation where more money was chasing fewer goods. Classic example, classic definition of inflation. Because the supply chains had been broken to a certain degree because of the pandemic. Okay, got it. But those supply chains did not create the kinds of inflationary pressures that we saw during the Trump period, lead right up to when Obama that's running the damn country, all right? So Freudian slip here, I guess. So Biden not only pumps in huge amounts of money into the system, he also stops the Keystone Pipeline. He also ends up, you know, creating, you know, bureaucratic impediments to going forward with further drilling, gas and oil. I mean, you know, shutting down the ANWR area from further drilling. I mean, it seems to me that his unwillingness to continue to drive American energy independence was all related to, you know it as well as I do, the climate change religion, and that's where he is. I mean, he said this during the campaign, we're coming after you, and he sure as hell did. And that's part of the inflationary problem. Notice how by July of 21, inflation was at 5.4%. By November, it's 6.8%. By March of 22, 7.9%. Notice too that February of 22 is when Putin invaded. How does that fit into Biden's inflationary explanation? Short answer, it doesn't. It really doesn't. This is all BS that these stupid, you know, fake news media people follow his line, okay? All right, my second topic I wanted to get to was the border. Now, here again, the argument has been all along, why are they not doing something? Okay, could it be that the Democrats really want all of these people to vote Democrat? And yes, Lori is shaking her head. Exactamente. Okay, she's got it. I've got it. Now you've got it. That's all this is. This is an attempt. This is gerrymandering at a level that is unbelievable. Okay? They've already let in 2 million people, the size of some of the biggest cities in the country. Okay, they're out there. So if their end game is to change the electoral system, they're getting away with it. Now, our only hope is that these people somehow, because we do have some states that have kind of turned things around with electoral reforms. That's the great hope. Okay? But be that as it may, if that's their goal, then we can rant and rave about, you know, the chaos that's there. 7,000 a day. And the anticipation is that Title 42, which allows, and actually Biden and them have sent back, I'd say about 500,000 or so illegals under Title 42, which is pandemic restrictions, okay? That's something to think about. But they're taking that away. The anticipation now is that within a short period of time, you're going to see caravans coming up, and you're going to get 18,000 a day crossing. I mean, that means we don't have a border, folks. It's over. Now, what Texas and those borderline states are going to do, I mean, they've got lawsuits pending, and we'll see where this goes. My hope is that the Republicans in the House, even though they're in a minority, will draft impeachment legislation and send a signal. Even though they can't pass it, I get that, but I did say something to Congressman Brooks, who we're supporting, that they should do it, even if it's an exercise in futility. But you never know. You could get 218 votes to bring it to the floor, and if that happens, then that means that some of these Democrats who are running scared may very well decide, you know, I like Uncle Joe, but he ain't my guy anymore. Screw him. Okay? Now, that could happen. But my point is, the Republicans have got to find the backbone to start talking about impeachment as an option once they take back the House and the Senate in this coming year. So we'll see, okay? All right, so now I'm 2 minutes over, and I'm about to say wrap it up. But I want to say one last thing. If you can, go to our website. Look carefully at what we're advocating here. Call Governor Ivey. It's 334-242-7100.
Repeat, please.
334-242-7100 and ask her to veto SB-171, the Numeracy Act. It's supposed to fix the math problem. It doesn't. It exacerbates it. I'll get into it more detail next week.
And your website?
The website, commonsensecampaign.org.
commonsensecampaign.org.
Okay. All right, folks, another fast half hour.
It
I suppose flies. We should try to make this an hour, but then I'd really go crazy. All right. So, all right, folks, please do call the governor and tell her veto SB-171. Y'all have a great week. We'll see you next week. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign. If you missed part of the show or want to tell a friend, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with the 181 on 181 and the state-of-the-art car wash. We're now resuming our regular programming of great music and memories, WABF. Good morning.